Good morning and welcome into the Monday edition of The Daily Perspective. Hi there, I'm Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. How was your weekend? I hope it was a good one. Hope you had a great weekend, that you unplugged a little bit and you took a little time to cleanse your brain. It's a good idea to take the weekend off, to get back to real life and connect with real people, because honestly, if you're a news junkie, and odds are the reason you're listening to this is because you're a news junkie, well, it's because, well, if you're a news junkie, you need to plug back in with real people, real family, real friends, and just enjoy life. Really enjoy life. And just forget about all of the insanity and the absurdity for a little while. It's so necessary. Otherwise, well, you'll get an ulcer. Let's just put it that way. You're not going to be a happy camper unless you unplug. And I suggest you do that on the weekends. If you can't unplug, then you're going to be an unhappy person. You're going to be a sad puppy. You just are. Bless your heart. And you don't want that happening. So please take my advice on the weekends. Unplug. I try my best to unplug. I'm not always successful, but I do try. One of the things that happened while unplugging over the weekend around our place was that our niece Deborah and her hubby Andrew had their second child. So congrats to them. Little Millie was born Friday. They induced labor, and from what I understand, it didn't take long. It was just about an hour. And then, boom, Millie said, yeah, I was ready to get out of there. I wanted to be out here and meet my big brother and the rest of the family. So congrats to them. Another member of the family is now among us, and that's a good thing. And what else was there? Honestly, not a lot. I told you last week, I think I told you last week, the story about my watch. And this is just personal stuff, and then we'll get to the news at hand. But my Apple Watch came apart. Man, there's that crazy little plastic piece that keeps falling off of something. I'm just going to leave it where it is for now. Anyway, the Apple Watch I actually popped open. I learned after doing some work on it, going to replace a part. I thought the adhesive had failed and the face had just come off, but it turns out that the Apple has actually had at least one class action lawsuit because the batteries in some Apple Watches swell up after a while. And when they swell up, the face of the watch pops loose. And that's what happened to mine. I learned this after I'd already dug into it and worked on it and everything. And I thought, now that I've already opened this thing up, my chances of going to Apple for a fix are not very good. And I also read that if you go to Apple, you go to the Apple store, they want to charge you $199, and then they just send you a new watch, or a replacement watch, I should say. So I decided to go the other route. I replaced the adhesive, tried to put it back together again, and it wouldn't stay. And that's when I realized the battery was a little fatter than it should have been. It had swelled up. And so I found a replacement battery online. $3.20. I was amazed. I ordered it. I installed it. I charged it up. It will hold a charge for about 4 hours. That's about as long as... And it's an original equipment battery. It's not a knockoff. It's an original equipment battery, and it's bad. I let the company know. They're sending me a replacement. But in the meantime, I thought that this watch was a goner. I think I told you that I had just drawn a line in the sand and wasn't going to spend any more money on it after that because, the battery's bad. If I do this and it's not fixed, then I'm just not putting any more money into it. And my wife said, well, I'll tell you what, happy Father's Day, order another watch. And so I did. I got up, I woke up about 3:30 Saturday morning and just couldn't get back to sleep. It's just one of those nights. It happens from time to time. And I sat in the living room in the dark and picked up my iPad and went ahead and ordered. I found a refurbished, refreshed generation two or was it three? Now I don't remember. Anyway, it's an Apple Watch. I think it's a Gen 2 Apple Watch, I believe. But I found it for relatively cheap, less than Apple would have charged me to replace the original watch that I had, and I placed the order. And then later that day, after I'd already placed that order, I got a response from the company where I bought the battery, and they're sending me a replacement. So now I'm going to have two of them, and I'll have to decide what to do with the old one. It'll probably end up being gifted to someone, probably. At any rate, that was pretty much the highlight of my weekend. It was a rainy one around our place, so I didn't take the little convertible out anywhere and do anything in it. Just went thrift store scavenging and let's see, did I find anything? Not really. Didn't find anything of any value this time. So that was pretty much the weekend. Not very exciting. Did church, did family time, did around the house stuff inside because we couldn't do outside stuff in the rain. And that was pretty much our weekend. Yeah, I know it's thrilling content. You're absolutely, absolutely riveted to your earphones. You can't step away because this is just exciting news. Well, let's move on to something that may be a little more entertaining. Purveyors of the global warming hoax have been duped once again. According to the Daily Caller, a sign at Glacier National Park in Montana stating the location's ice flow would vanish by 2020 at the hands of climate change. Well, this sign has been removed by the National Park Service. The goodbye to the glaciers sign was originally substantiated by computer models that projected that glaciers will all be gone by the year 2020. That's according to federal officials. However, higher than average snowfall has allowed the glaciers to thrive in recent years. And that invalidates that early 2000s computer projection. The U.S. Geological Survey told the Daily Caller this, quote, glacier retreat in Glacier National Park speeds up and slows down with a fluctuation in the local climate. Those signs were based on the observation prior to 2010 that glaciers were shrinking more quickly than a computer model predicted they would. Subsequently, larger than average snowfall over several winters slowed down that retreat rate. And the 2020 date used in the NPS display does not apply anymore. Well, what do you know? This is what I and many other people have been talking about for a while now, and that is computer models. The computer models that they are basing their fear mongering on are based on other computer models. So it's predictions based upon predictions. It's not predictions based upon reality. It's worst case scenarios based on possible worst case scenarios, not reality. And as a result, you have these signs popping up in national parks. Oh, yeah, these glaciers are going to be gone by 2020. Oops. Sorry about that. We were wrong. And you've seen this. I know you've seen this popping up as a meme on social media. All of the different times that the climate alarmists have been wrong. Well, just add this to the list. They've been wrong again. One more time. Oh, and somebody else who's wrong. Netflix and Disney, they're showing some revenue losses now. Yep, streaming services like Netflix, Hulu, and Disney Plus, they never waste an opportunity to tell the American public living in red states how much they hate them. From Netflix showing movies that could meet the legal definition of sexual assault of children, to making cartoons about babies in drag and ignoring customer concern, to Disney's CEO complaining about Alabama abortion laws, people are sick of their entertainment companies pushing a hard left agenda. Now, these services are not only going after conservative values, but are actively trying to harm conservative states. Fox News has reported that earlier last week, Netflix chief content officer Ted Sarandos issued a statement on the growing movement in Hollywood to boycott Georgia over the new pro-life legislation, which prohibits abortions if a baby's heartbeat is detected, which is roughly 6 weeks into the pregnancy. Disney's CEO has also threatened to stop filming in states where abortion is illegal, which is a head-scratcher considering this guy runs a company that depends on little kids as customers. Why would he try to reduce the population of his fan base? Fox News also reported that all of these companies claiming they care about women's right to kill their offspring have partnered with countries like Egypt, where abortions are also illegal, and China, where human rights abuses are well documented. It seems that American companies should be held accountable for trying to harm American states. This seems to be something the president might want to get involved in and apply some pressure. He recently told people to cancel AT&T. He said, "I believe that if people stop using or subscribing to AT&T, they'd be forced to make big changes at CNN, which is dying in the ratings anyway. It's so unfair. With such bad fake news, why wouldn't they act? When the world watches CNN, it gets a false picture of the USA. That's sad." Well, perhaps he can lead the way to putting the hurt on companies who want to hurt us. A new initiative called Red Petition is asking everyone to cancel their streaming accounts. Now, those of you who already did cancel one of these services for political reasons can still fill out their form so they can keep a running tally of how much the sermonizing Holly weirdos are costing their bottom line. The numbers are climbing every day. But if the president tweeted this out, imagine how much worse it would get for these companies. That would be some good entertainment. The mainstream media and entertainment companies have come out in full force against conservative values. It's time we show them that our voice matters. Perhaps they just don't realize how much the conservative audience is worth. From large cities to rural America, those who hold conservative values still have a massive financial influence, and it's time we see just how much their opposition to our core values really costs. And their losses are growing. People are canceling. In the last year, Netflix has lost over $161,000, almost $162,000 in streaming revenue. Hulu, over $51,000. Disney Plus, over $24,000. People are looking for family-friendly services that won't push socialism and abortion and other debauchery. There is an alternative. It's called PureFlix. You could give that a shot. But at the same time, we need to let these companies know that we're really not all that happy with what they're pushing on us. That the rest of the nation, the vast majority of the nation, all of those red states and red counties that you see on the Electoral College map, all of those red areas have family values and care about real life matters, not the fantasies being presented by the progressive left. We care about what's real and what really matters. We care about the unborn because we recognize the reality that the unborn are people. They're not just masses of cells. They're not just an inconvenience. They're people. We care about presenting real values. We care when we see children used to present the gay agenda. We care about things like this, and we object when certain lines are crossed. And as a result, we'll stop giving you our money. We'll just stop spending money on your product or your service because we can't in good conscience keep supporting you with our money. And when you tell us that the money is more important than people, which is what you're telling us by threatening to boycott states like Alabama and Georgia. Oh, look, our money. We're going to take our money away from you. Don't you want our money more than you want those babies? Come on now, be honest. Don't you want our money more than you want those babies? Come on. When you pull that on us, we see you for exactly who you are. You're lowlives. You're con artists. You've sold your soul. And you no longer identify with mainstream America. You're living in your echo chamber, in your little progressive bubble, and you think we're out of step with reality, when it's actually you that's out of step with reality. You see, life is precious, especially unborn, defenseless life. It's precious. And when you try to tell us that your money is more valuable, more important than unborn life, you're making a gigantic gigantic mistake. Please, don't get us wrong. We enjoy being entertained. We enjoy watching series on Netflix and Hulu. We enjoy Disney's products. We enjoy those things. We like taking our kids to Disney World and Disneyland and places like that. But if you keep trying to insist that your money means more than the children's lives, we're going to have to make a decision. And a lot of people are. They're deciding not to spend their money with you anymore. It may be time for you to wake up and smell the coffee. More after the break, when the Daily Perspective continues.
You guys patronizing me, or do you really like this?
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Good to have you along wherever you may be or whenever you may be listening. You're on the Facebook Live feed. Hey, good to have you there. If you are listening via podcast, thank you very much. I appreciate the fact that you're there, you subscribed, and you're sharing it with your friends. And if you're not sharing it with your friends, what's the wrong with you? Let other people in on the fun, okay? All right. And you podcast subscribers, you've probably noticed a bump in the quality because I've solved one of the issues, the technical issues that we were having. I kept having this weird thing where I would listen back to the podcast and it wouldn't be right. It would be skipping and it just was crazy. And I realized what happened was that the computer I was using for recording the show as it progressed was just overburdened. It was trying to do too many things. I had it doing too many things. So I took recording the podcast and put it on a different machine. I've got a laptop, and I mentioned this before, and I took that laptop and set it up, and now I'm looking over that direction in the studio, and I see the little meters bumping, and it's recording happily. It's just a happy puppy recording the podcast, nice and clean, and so your feed is coming along nicely. Also, on the same front, let's see, I mentioned last week that I had submitted to, we were on SoundCloud already, and I had submitted some other places. So now the podcast is available in a handful of different places. You can listen to it, of course, directly on the website at dailyperspectivepodcast.com. You can subscribe through iTunes and Google Podcasts. By the way, iTunes is very, very soon to become Apple Podcasts. So just be aware of that change because Apple is making some changes to iTunes. iTunes basically is going away, but everything that you still have, like if you subscribe to iTunes and you've got a lot of music in iTunes, don't panic because it's just becoming Apple Music and they're splitting Apple Podcasts off one way and some other things off another way. So you're going to be okay. All right. And what was that other one? Spotify. It's also now available on Spotify. So you can go to iTunes, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spotify. All four places now have the Daily Perspective in their listings. You may have to search my name in order to find them more easily. That's something I ran into on Spotify. But if I searched the Daily Perspective, I didn't see it. But if I searched Mark Congleton, bing, there it was. So might have to use my name to search it, but it is available in all four places, iTunes, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spotify. And of course, you can always go direct to the source, and that is to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Every day, it's posted right there. So you can just go straight to the website and listen right there if you'd like to. All right? All right. Now, let's move along, shall we? Guess who's back in the news? Yes. It's none other than...
What difference at this point does it make?
Yep. Hillary Rodham Clinton is back in the news. She says that there are two inescapable conclusions of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report. The first is that Russia conducted a sweeping and systemic interference into the 2016 election. And the second is that obstruction of justice occurred. Can I just pause for a moment? Can I just break for a moment from this Washington Times story and say, Russia spent about $100 on Facebook ads. Yeah, they did a little bit of meddling, but they keep trying to blame Hillary's loss on Russian interference. And the point is that she didn't need Russia's help to lose. She did that on her own. All right. Now, Hillary was making some comments during an appearance with Madeleine Albright Saturday at their alma mater, Wellesley College. She said, "You cannot read the report chapter and verse, fact after fact, without reaching those conclusions. People just want to quit hearing about it and get back to their normal lives. There's nothing normal about undermining the rule of law." Really?
What difference at this point does it make?
I tell you, there's nothing normal about attacking the press. Really? There's nothing normal about trying to undermine another branch of government. Well, she should know. That's all I'm saying. Good grief. President Trump has repeatedly said the Mueller report shows no collusion between his campaign and the Russians. Clinton said she was also worried that the speed of online communication could make the country vulnerable to the tactics of demagogues, including what she called the clever use of symbols combined with verbal and physical intimidation. She says, "This is a classic pattern. There's nothing new about it. I think given the rapidity with which information can be conveyed today because of the internet, it's an even more dangerous set of circumstances." Really?
What difference at this point does it make?
You don't say. The two former Democratic secretaries of state spoke on a range of topics from their years at Wellesley to the state of women's rights in the world. Oh, my gosh. I got to go back to her first line. "You cannot read the report chapter and verse, fact after fact, without reaching those conclusions." I would suggest, I can't prove this, I don't know for a fact, but I would suggest that Hillary, God love her, also has not read the report chapter and verse, fact after fact. I would dare say that practically anyone who says that they have is lying to you, especially the more high profile these people are. When it comes to people like Hillary Rodham Clinton,
what difference at this point does it make?
She's pretty dadgum high profile. And I would say she's desperate. I mean desperate to stay in the public eye because she loves being a celebrity. She loves being a celebrity. So she speaks as often as she possibly can. She lies about losing the election and how she lost the election, and she just can't let it go. And she loves the spotlight so much, and I would also say she loves cold, hard cash so much, that she is honestly willing to do practically anything to stay in the public eye and keep that cash flowing. And here's an example. Let's think back to the year 2000, Al Gore. He loses the presidency. What did he do? He quickly rebranded. He became an expert on global warming and climate change. That swift switchover likely saved him from a career in obscurity, and thanks to the profitability of carbon trading schemes, and they are schemes, it is a scam, he has become a very, very rich man. And taking a cue from her husband's former VP, failed Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton appears to be rebranding herself in a similar way as an expert on the issue of climate change. Although when she was in office, there were really no policy solutions to the problem offered by her or her hubby. Over the weekend, Hillary flew to the U.S. Virgin Islands for a meeting of the climate elite, hosted by, who else, the Clinton Global Initiative. She posted on Twitter saying, "Glad to be in St. Thomas, USVI, that's the U.S. Virgin Islands, this morning, speaking with leaders on the front lines of climate change. There are so many people working to create resilient communities and inspire climate smart actions. Tune in to hear from some of them at 11 a.m. Eastern." The benefit of being the Clinton of the Clinton Global Initiative is that you can make yourself the keynote speaker of an environmental event, despite having little to show in the way of environmental policy innovation. In her speech, Clinton promised to take the lead in handling the burgeoning environmental crisis and pledging to build climate resilience. Well, the change is innovative. Clinton has avoided climate change as an issue for decades. In 2012, she embraced it only so long as Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders remained in that presidential race. Once Sanders exited and gave his endorsement to Clinton, Clinton dropped the discussion of environmental issues from her campaign stump speech. Sanders' aides noted that Clinton felt the environment wasn't a central issue of her campaign, but it was more of an add-on. Her policy platform on the issue, from her 2012 website, shows that she mostly just planned on continuing President Obama's environmental efforts and using the Paris Climate Accords as a benchmark for meeting environmental goals within the United States. Certainly no Green New Deal. The meeting is being held in St. Thomas because, Clinton said on social media, quote, island nations and territories already bear the brunt of climate change, end quote. They're all drowning! They're sinking! The icebergs are melting! Do you notice that they met in the Virgin Islands? Do you know how you get to the Virgin Islands? It's either very slowly, by boat, or by jet. And in her case, a private jet. Now, I will say this, at least she is conforming to the model. She is following in the footsteps of every climate change person who is a high-profile climate change advocate. She's using possibly the highest polluting version of transportation possible to get to her speaking engagements. Good for her. Way to go, Hillary.
What difference at this point does it make?
Mr. Personality starts now.
Not sure what he means by that, but thanks. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Hi there. Oh, man. It is the Monday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. And I'm glad you're along. Thanks a lot. I'm just looking through my stories. It's just amazing. Over the weekend, just the things that happen. I don't know if you've traveled much, but I haven't traveled a lot. I've traveled a little, and Dave Mack, when we were doing the Mark and Mack show, used to every now and then he would say, "Well, you've traveled. You're an extensive traveler." No, I'm not an extensive. I've been on a handful of cruises, and I've been on an airplane. I've traveled across country a couple of times. To the West Coast, but I'm not an extensive traveler. I haven't been to Europe. I haven't been to a lot of places around the world, but I've been enough to know how good we have it here. And I've been to enough places to see the stark differences between the United States of America and other places who look at us like we're cheating somehow to have everything we have. And some of those places, wow, I understand. I completely and totally understand why people are flooding our southern border. I completely get that, because if they feel like they could get a bunch of goodies that they're not getting where they live, and life could be better if they just break the law and come across our border. You know, I get that. I get that. But in traveling from place to place, one of the things you notice, especially if you travel via airline, is that they're very strict about smoking. They will not allow you to smoke in the cabin. Doesn't happen. I mean, it used to be you could smoke anywhere. I don't know if you're old enough to remember that, but it used to be that if you didn't like cigarette smoke, you had to get up and move, because you didn't have a smoking section and no smoking sections. I believe the way that worked was originally you could smoke anywhere, and then they had no smoking sections for people who didn't like the cigarette smoke. And then you had smoking sections for people who wanted to smoke. and they separated that section off. I'll tell you what I remember when I think about that, and that is Cracker Barrel restaurants. There was a section that was the smoking section, and you know, there are these dividers between the different areas in a dining area in a Cracker Barrel. They're all this lattice work, like you would put outside and grow ivy and things on. They're that lattice work, and they have pictures and things hung on that lattice work. And if you noticed, if you sat next to the smoking section, there was plexiglass in between two pieces of that lattice work. So it still looked like everything else, but there was a transparent wall dividing that section off, and they set up the air conditioning so that it circulated the air and didn't pump any of the smoke into the rest of the dining area. But that's what it eventually became. It became a smoking section, and now all across the country, no, you're not smoking here. And on airlines, they adopted the same sort of a thing, where they had smoking sections, they had smoking, non-smoking, and then eventually they eliminated the smoking altogether. And in the restroom, if you go to the toilet on an airplane, not only are you taking your own life in your hands, but on a cross-country flight, let's say you're on an airliner for 5 or 6 hours, you're going to need to go at some point. Well, there are very clear indicators. There are signs, no smoking signs, on the doors to the restrooms, on the walls inside the restrooms. There are no smoking signs. You can't smoke anywhere on an airplane. They just won't let you. But there's always one hard head in the crowd. And a passenger on an airplane has found out the hard way that he couldn't even smoke his e-cigarette. And why? It set off a smoke alarm. The guy reportedly triggered the smoke detector on a Spirit Airlines flight while he was trying to use his e-cigarette in the plane's restroom. He had reportedly been caught trying to use the device in the main cabin only moments before. He tried to smoke in the main cabin. The incident occurred on a flight from Detroit to New Orleans. According to an attendant on the flight, the passenger used the e-cigarette in his seat and attempted to exhale into a bag. Detroit boy knew. He knew. This ain't kosher. Got to try to hide it. He knew. He's trying to exhale into, what did he use? One of the air sick bags? What was he thinking? Well, she confronted him, told him, you can't do that. Not on the plane. Can't use your e-cig here, buddy. And a few minutes later, he got up and went to the restroom. While he was still in the lavatory, the plane's smoke alarm activated. Oh my gosh. E-cigarettes and other similar devices are unlikely to trigger a smoke alarm, but they can activate one if the vapor is blown into it, especially in a small enclosed space like an airplane bathroom. This guy must have been puffing his brains out. He's in there making up for lost time. Oh, gosh. He has created a dense fog. And I don't mean that kind of dense fog. Thank you very much. He created a dense fog of his e-cig vapor in the restroom and set off the smoke alarm. The pilot of the plane was forced to descend. Had to get down to 35,000 feet to deactivate the alarm. When the plane landed at Louis Armstrong International Airport in New Orleans, a deputy sheriff was waiting. According to him, the passenger smelled of alcohol, appeared to be intoxicated, and another passenger on the flight confirmed that, claiming the man had been sneaking drinks from several bottles of alcohol he'd been hiding under his jacket. Attaboy! The passenger was not arrested when the plane landed. He reportedly denied smoking in the restroom, claimed he was unaware that it wasn't allowed on planes. Spirit Airlines apparently had a harsher response, though. They banned him from Spirit Airlines for life. So Detroit boy's got to find another way home. Mr. E-Cig has got to find another way to get home. Kind of wonder if he's going to try to sneak a smoke on the restroom on his flight back. I hope we hear about that story. Wouldn't that be great? Yeah, I couldn't get back on Spirit, so I'm on Southwest headed back. What do you mean I can't smoke in the John? What an idiot. Like I said, if you go to the restroom on a plane, there are do not signs of various kinds all over. And it's because people are idiots. You know, it's that old comics gag. You know why that sign's on the door that says, oh, don't open it during flight? Because sometime in the past, some genius got up and said, baby, I feel like stretching my legs. I'll be right back. So there are no smoking signs prominently displayed in every jet airliner you board. And there are no smoking signs. There are no smoking signs in the restroom. They're all over the place. You know those red circles with a slash? There are red circles with a slash. In fact, there's a red circle and a slash on the underside of the toilet lid telling you can't flush certain things. There's red circles and slashes on the trash cans telling you can't throw certain things in there. There are red circles and slashes next to the faucet on sinks so you can see, no, you can't pour certain things down here. There are all kinds of warnings. One of those warnings is a red circle and a slash through a cigarette or an image of someone with a cigarette. It's very clear you're not smoking on the plane. No, no, no. You can't do that. But this guy, who obviously had been drinking on his way to New Orleans to continue drinking, decided it's time for a smoke. They won't let me do it. I can't exhale in the in the air sick bag. So I guess I'll go to the John. Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh. People never disappoint, do they? They just never disappoint. Holy cow. Oh, man. I just hope this guy, I got to be honest with you. I really, really, really hope this guy pulls this same stunt on his return flight. I hope he does. I want to see the story pop up in the news. Oh, man. Bugs Bunny was right. What a maroon. What an ignoramus. Oh, gosh. I'm actually looking at the comments below this article. And there's somebody who says, I remember chain smoking on planes. The ashtrays were built into the end of the armrests, if you can believe that. Ha-ha, the good old days. That's exactly what I was talking about. You used to be able to smoke on the planes. It used to be such that if you didn't like cigarette smoke, it was you that had to move. Oh, man. Listen, I don't know for certain. I really don't know for certain, and I'm just guessing here, but I would be willing to bet that Joe Smoker here is a passionately anti-Trump Democrat. Kind of fits the pattern. What do you mean I can't do what I want to do in spite of the fact that it's a federal law? Man, the man has his boot on my neck. I just want to smoke. That's all I want.
Time to ram-a-lamming, ding-dong.
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. It's the Monday edition of the show. I'm a little delirious. Does it show? Hey, just a reminder that today, John Dean, the former House counsel, or the former counsel to President Richard Nixon during the Watergate days, will appear as a special guest player in the House Democrats' production of Political Theater. They're desperate to keep the focus on impeachment and then deny that they want to impeach anybody. These people are loony, and I'm being very, very kind in that description. But John Dean, stop and think about how long ago that was and how old this guy is now. And they have pulled him in to testify in some way, shape, or form. And all this can be is political theater. It's political theater at its best. These guys are desperate, absolutely desperate. Did I mention the fact that they're desperate? They're absolutely desperate to demean the presidency of Donald Trump. They're doing everything they can to keep this in the public eye, and the press is helping them. So today, when you see all of these stories about John Dean testifying before Congress, just remember, it's the Democrats posturing, it's the Democrats playing a part, and it's just another edition of Democrat political theater. That's all it is. And they're pretending that the Trump administration is doing things that have never been done before. And they're just aghast. They're just totally in shock that they would be so disruptive and so obstructive. And you know what? They're hoping you don't remember something. They're hoping you don't remember that the Obama administration was much, much more obstructive. There are 9 different times. These are just the highlights. 9 different times that the Obama administration refused to cooperate. 9 different ones. It'll be in the show notes today. Get the show notes. Subscribe. Go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Look in the right-hand column. Fill out the form. Respond to the acknowledgement email. You have to. You have to respond to an email that you get in order to be able to be put on the list. It's called a double opt-in process, just making sure you intend to. So, because I've had times in the past where people say, I didn't sign up for this. Well, you obviously did, or you wouldn't be getting it. So, get signed up, get the show notes. This article is there. I'm looking at the clock. There's no way I can get through everything in this article. That's why I'm telling you to get signed up and get it. I'm going to hit the highlights, all right? And here are those 9 instances, counting down from number 9 to number 1. Fighting subpoenas in the new Black Panther Party's voter intimidation investigation. You remember this, right? Where members of the new Black Panther Party stood in front of a polling place in Philadelphia with baseball bats, dressed in their paramilitary uniforms, and they were intimidating voters. There was a case against them in 2008, started by the Bush administration. The Obama administration won the case by default when the new Black Panther Party didn't show up in court to defend themselves, but the DOJ decided to dismiss the charges. The former Justice Department attorney and current PJ media contributor, J. Christian Adams, quit his position in the Justice Department to protest the Obama administration's handling of that case and confirm the racial motivation behind the decision to drop the case against them. An investigation was launched. The Obama administration fought it rigorously, and the investigation was stonewalled. Subpoenas were fought. Key players were instructed not to testify. Number 8, they refused to let the White House social secretary testify on the party crasher scandal. This happened in 2009. 2 party crashers successfully got by the Secret Service during a state dinner, succeeded in meeting and shaking hands with Barack Obama. Congress investigated the breach in security. But when White House Social Secretary Desiree Rogers was asked to testify before Congress, the White House refused to let her testify. Obama's press secretary explained during a press briefing that based on separation of powers, staff here don't go to testify in front of Congress. That explanation was questioned by legal scholars. And Mark Rozelle, a public policy professor at George Mason, an expert on executive privilege, said, I'd completely fall out of my chair if they invoked executive privilege with regards to a social secretary arranging a party for what was arguably a very nonpartisan investigation led by the Democrats. It certainly makes you wonder what the Obama White House was hiding at the time. Number 7, refusal to provide subpoenaed Solyndra documents. You remember the Solyndra scandal. The Obama administration wasn't exactly interested in letting Congress exercise their oversight responsibilities when they investigated how the Obama administration could have given them a huge loan when they were going bankrupt. When House Republicans subpoenaed documents for their investigation, the Obama White House fired back, claiming their request would put an unreasonable burden on the president's ability to meet his constitutional duties. House Republicans accused the Obama White House of hiding information, and they responded with accusations of a partisan investigation. Number six, Justice Kagan's Obamacare conflict of interest. Prior to being nominated as a justice for the Supreme Court, Elena Kagan served as Solicitor General for the Obama administration, during which time she was heavily involved in crafting a legal defense for Obamacare. This conflict of interest was important, since issues revolving around Obamacare would be going before the Supreme Court. Federal law dictates that Supreme Court justices must recuse themselves when their impartiality might reasonably be questioned. Naturally, the Obama administration didn't want Kagan to recuse herself from any Obamacare-related cases. So when the House Judiciary Committee requested documents and interviews to get a clear understanding of her role relating to Obamacare while she was Solicitor General, the Obama Holder Justice Department refused to comply. When Eric Holder testified before the committee, he claimed to have no knowledge of the request. Number five, the House refuses to allow political director to testify. In 2014, Democratic operatives were concerned that the Obama White House wasn't doing enough to help in the forthcoming midterms. In response to these concerns, Obama launched the White House Office of Political Strategy and Outreach. This raised eyebrows for some, who were concerned that Obama and his minions were using White House resources for political activity. So, the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee began investigating in order to make sure the White House was complying with civil services laws designed to prevent executive branch employees from engaging in political activity. David Simas, the director of the Office of Political Strategy and Outreach, was subpoenaed, but the White House refused to allow him to testify before Congress. Treasury officials, number four, blocked from testifying on Obamacare subsidies. When Obama started making all sorts of unilateral and illegal changes to Obamacare, Republicans were none too happy about the abuse of power. When Obama's IRS decided to expand Obamacare subsidies to be used in federal exchanges in addition to state exchanges, the Obama administration refused to allow Treasury Department officials to testify on the rule-changing progress, using the excuse that the issue was soon to be decided on the Supreme Court. Number three, Ben Rhodes was not allowed to testify on the Iran nuclear deal. The Iran nuclear deal was so bad, Obama didn't even try to get Senate ratification for it, and much of the negotiations were done without Congress being informed. When congressional Republicans wanted to get answers after Ben Rhodes, the failed novelist turned Obama speechwriter, turned top foreign policy advisor to Obama, when Ben Rhodes let it spill to the New York Times that the administration relied on a false narrative to sell the Iran deal to the public, the White House wouldn't let him testify, using the separation of powers excuse. Then there's Lois Lerner. She refused to testify on the IRS targeting. Remember, she was the director of the Exempt Organizations Unit of the IRS when they were inappropriately targeting conservative and Tea Party groups. When she appeared before Congress in May of 2013, she gave a statement but refused to answer questions by pleading the Fifth Amendment. Republicans called her back in March of 2014 when she pulled the same stunt. At the same time, Representative Elijah Cummings blasted Republicans for wanting to question Lerner. Today, Cummings is the House Oversight and Reform Chairman and has a much different attitude about Congress's role of oversight when it comes to Trump. And finally, the number one. Eric Holder refused to provide subpoenaed Fast and Furious documents. The investigation of the botched Fast and Furious investigation is perhaps the most significant example of the Obama administration using executive privilege to justify their refusal to cooperate with an investigation. Holder refused to provide subpoenaed documents to the House Oversight and Reform Committee. The blatant attempts by the administration to resist cooperating with the investigation ultimately led to a historic vote to hold Attorney General in criminal contempt. Obama's Attorney General was held in criminal contempt. That's nine examples from the previous administration. And nothing that's happened so far with the Trump administration rises to the level of any of these. It's political theater, people. Political theater. It's all a distraction It's all lies. Just remember that. And remember to come back tomorrow for another edition of The Daily Perspective. That's it for me. God bless. Bye-bye.